This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Constellation by Story Archives. I'm your host, Mario Busto, alongside
the other host, Zachary Newton. Welcome back.
I feel like I should just introduce the show as Story Archives and not Constellation by Story Archives, but whatever. We'll do it next week or tomorrow because we're behind on recording. And this is Constellation, episode 6, titled Paul is Dead, which immediately reminded me of like the Encoded. You know how there's like this Beatles theory that Paul McCartney died a long time ago and they replaced him with like a talent show Paul McCartney look-alike winner?
I can't say I'm very familiar with that theory. Yeah,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's the song The Walrus, or I Am The Walrus.
Oh, yeah. I know
like,
The Walrus.
If you play it backwards, it says The Walrus was Paul. Something like that, or the Walrus was dead, or something like that. There's a whole thing. Go down the rabbit hole if you want to.
Yeah, I don't. I'll have to take a look offline.
Yeah. Well, we got the Paul episode. We talked about this. Finally. I think we damn near predicted it, or I damn near said like, hey, you know,
next episode
is probably going to be the flashback, right? And this whole episode was a flashback, albeit a little anticlimactic at the end in terms of. It just ends, like, it just brings us up to speed, right? Really, the whole point of this episode seems to be to catch Paul's storyline or his timeline up with Joe's timeline. That's what it felt like to me when I was watching it.
Yeah, it really felt like it to me as well, but I'm super happy that we got this episode. Yeah, yeah. I've been waiting for this episode. And look, say what you want. I think that this episode really kind of confirms a few things for us. Like, for example, there's two universes, or there's two things that we see. And, you know, when you're seeing stuff from both universes, you're kind of just like seeing this like crossover. It's just like there's like an overlap, like a Venn diagram. So I think we got a pretty clear answer on that one in this episode. I don't know if you feel differently.
This episode sure seems to point to a two universe or two timeline experience that we're going through. I feel like this might be the type of scenario where the bet looks lost, but then at the end you get some like Joanna facing God type of moment where she realizes like you are just a drop in a larger ocean, you know, some crap like that where there's just a million, and then I get bailed out like at the last minute where all hope looks lost. It feels like it could go that way, but
I mean, anything could, but I don't think we're going to go that way. I really hope not.
Well, for your sake, you would be
definitely for my sake. I'm already down too at this point. Jeez.
Yeah. Well, this episode's pretty much carried by Paul Lancaster, played by William Catlett, which I gotta say he absolutely kills the entire episode. No pun intended. But I want to say something. There's a scene where he comes in from outside of his house and goes inside. And I was like, damn, this guy reminds me of Muhammad Ali. Like, if they did a legit biopic.
I could totally see that.
Yeah. It's just like his demeanor, the way he walks, like even like the haircut is kind of similar. I was like, damn. And that's a high compliment. I'm sure if he listened to this pod, he'd be like sending it to his agent. Like, hey, push me forward to any Muhammad Ali biopic right now. Because I didn't even watch the Will Smith's Ali. But I got to go back and watch it and see if it's actually good. And I feel like it's going to be sacrilege to say that, but, you know, I didn't watch it. And I feel like Muhammad Ali's overdue for, like, an epic biopic. Even Mike Tyson's getting one. I think Jamie Foxx is going to play, like, Mike Tyson or something.
Isn't Mike Tyson playing or fighting, like, Jake Paul?
In August, and the whole world is rooting for him, you know?
Yeah.
Even though Jake Paul, I mean, hate him, love him, whatever you want. I mean,
he seems pretty good.
Well, he's not...
He's
good. He's damn good. Don't get me wrong. It's just Mike Tyson in his prime was a different level of good. Like Mike Tyson's 52 years old, you know? So it's not like he's choosing Mike Tyson. Look, if Jake Paul had the chance, he would totally fight like the champion of the world. I'm sure he would. He's good at boxing, but my point is that if, love him, hate him, whatever you want, he's put boxing, he's made it in the public spotlight again. Boxing has very much been like in the shadow of UFC for a little bit, and he's created a rivalry now between boxing and UFC. He's pretty, I think he's defeated every single UFC fighter who stepped into the ring with him, who to be fair, they're not professional boxers, but he's done a damn good job, and he knows what he's doing in there. It's just a matter of getting the reps, but you got to respect somebody who's at least staking it and doesn't care what anybody thinks. So, you know, I'll give him that. I don't really consume his content too much, but I respect what he's doing. So
me neither. It's kind of crazy. We'll move on from this in a second, but I don't know too much about, like, you know, what the ages are that are appropriate to be fighting. But I saw that. I'm like, dude, I really hope something bad does not happen with Mike Tyson. Like that would suck. Like, I don't know, like, how long, like for example, like the NFL lifespan is actually pretty short, right? Like, you don't play all that long. Well, I don't know if it's the same for boxing.
He lost to Tyson Fury's nephew, I believe, who's a professional boxer, albeit he's a lower ranked boxer from what I know. He did lose to him in decision. He did. I don't think he got knocked out by him. So this would be the first time the second time he fights a legit boxer, but Tyson's 52, like I said, and youth always wins. So can Tyson's just badass? If Tyson wins, it has to be in in the first couple of rounds. It has to be in the first couple of rounds, because if these guys are going like 10, 12 rounds, you know, good luck keeping up with like a 28-year-old, 29-year-old. So
that's true.
It's just, he can do all the conditioning he wants. It's just, he's got to knock his ass out. It's pretty much what needs to happen. And don't get me wrong, Tyson hits him with some of those uppercuts. You see him in this training videos.
Oh, I saw some of the training videos. Wicked.
Paul's going lights out. But to my point, you don't watch too many sports outside of like NCAA men's basketball. No, and not too much. And March Madness is week, so that's cool. But the fact that you knew about the boxing match proves the point that he's made boxing more relevant, even for people who don't really watch it. And I don't really watch boxing. I watch UFC.
I love watching UFC. I just don't do it religiously.
yeah. Okay. To the episode again. That was a nice little rabbit hole. Anyways.
Yeah, I loved it.
There's a couple things that go down. We get the ISS disaster scene all over again. And the whole time, you kind of realize it within a few seconds. You realize that the whole show's been cutting between the two versions of Alice and Joe the entire time.
Yes.
Pretty much.
Yes. And glad you picked up on that.
And you notice it in the scene because they keep switching from English to Swedish when they're talking. Mm-hmm. Specifically, Alice and Joe, obviously. But Alice, you can tell which version of hers because she's responding one way or the other. And so it seems the version of Alice who... All right, the Joe that we know, the one who's not dead, right?
Yes.
And at this point, we are assuming that Joe is dead because she's left in the space station, which is the difference. Mm. She actually brought Paul back. We're assuming that the Swedish Alice's mom is the one who's alive. Because when Joe comes back, she's expecting her daughter to know Swedish. So that version of her is the one that's alive.
Okay.
And then similarly, Go ahead.
I've just got to say, like, that was the point I was trying to make like an episode or two ago, where it's like, look, the Joes, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the Pauls, clearly the Pauls, both Joe and Paul, they switch. Like the versions of them that were in the two different realities, reality A, reality B, switched. So Joe, reality B is now in reality A and vice versa. And the same situations with Paul. I think that's just clear as day from this episode for me. So I don't know if you still disagree with that. It sounded like you came around and you're agreeing with me now.
I don't think I ever disagreed on the fact that that scenario. What I was arguing for was that there is probably more than two versions of these people. However, that's looking really bad right now. So I will concede for now that the case looks bad. But remember, we had a scenario like this in another show, and I think it was Invasion, and I was bailed out like at the last minute. Anyways, Joe does hit her head and die, seemingly, on this. But throughout the episode, I don't know if you got the same idea, but Paul came to like, he was with it way faster than Joe in terms of like what was wrong with him. To the point where he even records her on the ship when he thinks she's breathing. He gets his iPod out immediately and starts recording her. And he hears the recording on the ship that Joanna hears from the Marine Observatory, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, you know, I feel like there was a moment of both, right? Like, well, there was a moment on the ship back in like episode, God, what was it, two? One and two are a little blurry. Like, I almost wish it was just my mom. But yeah, early in the show, where Joe heard Paul as well, right? Like, so like there was a moment where she did realize it. But I do agree, like, Paul seemed to kind of start to put the pieces together a lot quicker. And, you know, I'm sure there's reasons for that. You know, like, we don't want to see the entire last five episodes rehashed again, just from Paul's perspective.
Yeah.
So I'm glad like we didn't sit on it too long. Yeah. But, you know, there was also things that happened, I think, you know, to Paul that didn't happen as like, obviously to Joe, might be the way to put it. Like, so for example, in this episode, when Paul's sitting in the Soyuz, like, Joe sounds like she's literally talking. Like, yes, we got the Paul breathing bits and whatnot. That was really freaky. This one actually kind of creeped me out a little bit more. Like, I wasn't sure if like Joe was gonna like wake up or something. But I feel like we heard her talking like through the dead body somehow a lot more than we heard Paul doing anything but breathe.
Yeah. I will say, you know, to your point of what we're talking about, Paul catching on a little faster, even though it was sped up in this episode through the days, right? Yeah. He had more to go off of, in my opinion. And why I say that is because he's working on the Cal experiment, which, by the way, that's another detail. One reality does not have this Cal experiment going on, and the other one does. So yeah. The reason that he's like, where's the Cal, is because he has warped into the reality with Bud Caldera, where the Cal does not exist as an experiment. Yeah. Now, he mentioned, the reason I say he's catching on quicker and why he has more to grab onto, because A, nobody knows what the hell he's talking about with the Cal, right? Yeah. So he has two options, either to believe that something went wrong with the Cal, or to believe that he's losing his mind, because nobody knows what experiment he's talking about. Nobody knows Commander Caldera, who he worked under and who he said it was the honor of his life to work under him, right?
Yeah.
And he has those two things to bounce off of, the fact that these two people are not the same. Oh, and also his wife's name is not the same. It's Frida in one reality and it's Erica in this reality.
And when we saw a few episodes ago, Joe talking to Frida, I can't remember which way the names were, but she also got the name, I guess, wrong as well, which is really interesting, right? Like, so for example, is the name Henry Caldera and Bud Caldera, like, different? Is it just different, or is it just more of like their preference? And I'm kind of getting the sense that it's actually different, potentially based on the way that the show is going. And I also was just going to mention, like, since we were talking about like this being really sped up, like, yeah, it this is much more that Paul, like, with the story we're seeing with Paul is a lot more sped up, not that he's catching on like super quick or anything like that. Like, we go from episode one past episode five, yes, from what we saw, yes, about Joe in this episode, because we go from before the experiment here to after, I guess, Paul sees Joe's daughter in her house.
Man, it just goes to the point of the fact that the actor who plays Paul Lancaster, I blanked on his name, William Catlett. You know, you figure the casting director must have made him read lines from this episode, just because there's the spectrum of emotions that he has to go through in this episode as someone who's kind of losing their mind, which was just really fun to watch, to be honest with you. It was like riveting. And Apple does a really good job of, specifically Apple TV shows that make you care about characters you haven't met yet. Mm-hmm. We just experienced that. We just finished a series called Masters of the Air. We did a 9-episode coverage on that, which you can catch if you did not watch it, where that show does a really good job of making you just love characters that come in from episode to episode.
Yeah.
And he just does a terrific job in this. Alice makes a point, because like I was saying earlier, that there's different things about these worlds. In one world, Henry saves the day with the Apollo 18 mission. And then the other reality, Apollo 18 is the biggest F-up in NASA history, where two men died. And that's the reality where Bud is stuck in. My understanding is that Bud and Henry also switched places, and it's the reason why Bud is so disgruntled. in a major way, is that Henry is the one who messed up, I guess, in that situation, or had the disgrace of coming back from that mission, while Bud should have been the one coming back from a successful mission. But I want to take this all to one point, because in that Apollo 18 mission, in one reality, two men died. And Alice makes a mention in this episode. She says, if you die in space, do you die on Earth? And yeah. I think that's what every single one of these characters has in common. And it's the reason why they all share this experience together. Joe, Paul, Irina, and Bud and Henry, right? It's mm-hmm. the fact that Henry might be the only one who bucks the trend. It's that one version of them died in space. So Irina died in space, Joe died in space, and Paul died in space, all in one reality. Mm-hmm. Henry and Bud, that's still a mystery, and maybe keeps my bet alive. But I don't know what's going on with Henry. But you get, what'd you think of Alice with that line and the theory that the death in space is what kind of ties these characters together?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I feel like to kind of like apply that much meaning to it, like we might be looking into it too much. Like, to me, that was just this young girl's kind of way of coping with what happened. And just, you know, I mean, like she's not only is her mother dead, but she's never even going to see her dead mother's body again. Nobody's going back up to space, to the ISS, just to pick up a body.
Well, perhaps, it's not happening. Perhaps the reason she even made it off ISS in the first place, Paul and her, was because Paul left the body behind. And she was alive. She wasn't actually dead. So she was able to pull open the latch.
So I'm not going to say the biggest, but one of the biggest mysteries to me at this point, because it's so confusing, you know, whether or not it was the dead version of Joe that released the hatch, right? Because there is no dead version of Paul to have released the hatch for Joe.
Exactly.
He's not up there, right? So
exactly.
So, I mean, could there be another body? Like, that could be weird. Probably not surprising, because the ISS has been up there for, like, what, decades at this point?
The only thing my mind went to was that maybe these timelines are not moving at even times. Like, one is slightly ahead. But I don't think that makes sense. I think these are two train cars moving at exactly the same speed. And everything's happening at once.
Yeah, I feel like everything is happening at the same exact time. I mean, I'm not like a physicist or anything like that. So like, going based off of the definition I heard of this like quantum entanglement, I guess, idea, right? Like, it's these things exist in two different places at the same time. And, you know, like, it only makes up its mind what it wants to be until somebody looks at it. I don't know if we're the ones looking at it, or if like Joe and Paul and some of these people that have, like, you know, crossed this bridge and have this connection with both sides are the ones looking at it. I'm not quite sure, but like, that comment makes me think that these are both moving at the same exact, you know, speed and time.
I tend to believe that as well. The thing is, Joe didn't have the experience of imagining Paul breathing, I don't believe. But Paul did.
No, he did. I'm 99% sure that Joe heard breathing, and that's why it was so damn creepy, because it was just like this breathy noise. And you're like, is Paul about to like sit up or something? Just like I was feeling about Joe in this episode. I just don't remember dead Paul speaking early on.
I'm leaning towards the idea that maybe Joe wasn't dead, because I don't know. That's just what I'm leaning towards. I don't feel super confident in it, but that's what I am leaning towards.
Well, here's an interesting, I guess, thought experiment, right? Like, so what if in these, I forget what they called it, like an episode or two ago, like these spaces that you can be in, where you're kind of like between two things. So for example, what was it? It was like 3 miles out or 8 miles out or whatever it was. And then it's also in outer space. 7 miles. Yeah. Like you're in this place where you're like kind of able to be in two different places at once. Like, what if, because I don't know, dead Joe's body is up there, like she's kind of just like stuck in this in between state. Like if you're looking at two circles and you see a little overlap, maybe she's like kind of like right in the middle. So I don't know. She could end up flipping either way. So maybe well, it was bounce. Her.
She does seem to bounce from reality to reality. Remember the scene where she's invisible pretty much. So, but then again, I don't know. It's so damn confusing still.
It is so confusing.
And could it all be that this is just all, you know, stuff going on in their head? We do get the explanation about the high altitude psychosis. Could this be one of those things? I know we don't like that very much, but
no, I think that's the end of the
show and it's
No. Yeah. I would never watch a second season if we end the show and that's the problem. All right, y'all. Yeah. It's just, you know, just they just needed some pills. Thanks for watching. True. No, I don't think I could handle that.
Moral of the story, take your pills. Like yeah, that sucks. That would suck.
I don't know, man. Like it is a little confusing. I still think there's just two universes. Like, you know, one of the other things that happened, which is when Paul was leaving on the Soyuz, he saw Joe clear as day in the ISS, yes, alive, looking out at him. And so that's where I start to get a little confused with like, okay, but if our theory of everything is moving at the same time, like when on earth would that have happened? Now, the moment where Paul is pushing Joe's body into this room where she's just floating there, and happens to get like a flash of like Joe alive, which if you recall back in episodes 1 or 2, that was the same exact moment when the living Joe grabs Paul's floating hand. That one made perfect sense to me. That one made perfect sense. It's just the one where you see her kind of in the ISS moving around that was a little bizarre. And I can't think of another way to put that.
I gotta say, I think they PG'd this episode because when Joe bangs her head across the glass and the hole opens up into space,
yeah,
I thought her eyeball was gonna get sucked out of her head.
Like, I thought a lot was gonna get sucked out of her head.
And I think that they kind of played that one like a little bit more calmly because that would have been a horrible vision to see him pull her back and just like her freaking insides coming out.
And
of her eyes
and socket. Somehow he ends up just plugging the hole with a baby wipe. Like I bet you
that's true.
Not a scientist. I don't know.
I bet you it's true because for them to do that, that's so audacious that to not research how to plug that hole. Yeah, I bet you it's true.
I wouldn't be surprised. I've always thought of space like this super like strong vacuum and it like it would just rip things apart.
Yeah.
I'm kind of thinking about you remember, have you seen the what was it, episode 3 of Star Wars, Revenge of the Sith, where you got the spaceship and you got General Grievous out there, shoots one of the windows, the window just busts open and just sucks everybody out like crazy. Which clearly was kind of happening. Like there was a lot of like just pressure, you know, going out the hole in the window. But I thought it was just going to be more severe than that.
How do we explain Paul in the capsule over like hearing the wrong signal from Houston? Because he says Houston ordered him to leave Joanna's body up there. And they're saying, no, we didn't. That was your assessment. So what was he listening to?
I don't know that that's the case. I think that what was really happening was... neither side wanted to take responsibility for what happened. That's what I really think was so happening. Because they're like, yeah, we told you, but God, Paul, it was just based on your assessment.
After I thought it was signals crossing.
Because you told me.
I thought it was signals crossing where he was hearing what Joanna was hearing and she was hearing what he was hearing type of thing.
I don't think that happened.
Well, the message was the same. The message was the same in terms of like you need two people to unlatch the capsule, right?
Part. Yeah.
So they were hearing the exact same message at the same exact time. So I'm not sure, man. There's so many unanswered questions here. And his first instinct was to go back to the Apollo 18 disaster because maybe historically that was the only thing he could think about regarding, you know, maybe some people who had a similar experience to him.
Or just thinking about Henry's shining moment, right? Like going, like nobody knows who Henry is. Henry's a hero. What are you talking about? He goes back to maybe his most famous mission and then realizes that it's
different from his
different
history.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You always knew like this episode had to end with him going to see Bud and hopefully Bud didn't shoot him in the head because he does pull a gun and pull the trigger. So hopefully
Look, man,
that was just a warning shot.
Look, the name of this episode is Paul is Dead. I was contemplating, you know, I'm like, am I reading into this somehow, or are they just like telling us what's happening?
You want to make that bet right now?
I'm not quite sure. So maybe. So what I'm wondering is,
shot and kill Paul, because I'll take the opposite and try to recoup a lost bet on this episode.
Man, like, I've been going back and forth like 50-50 on this the entire time. I'm like, you know, on one side of the coin, I could see, all right, you know, one way to just kind of like answer a few questions, because I do think we got questions answered. I think it's clear that there's two realities and you're bouncing between both. Like, I feel like we got a lot of clarity about what's going on, and now we're kind of starting to see Joe comprehend something. And now that we know what's happening, I think the story is going to pivot into, okay, why is it happening? So I'm like, okay, maybe they just killed him off because they just wanted us to get those answers and then move back over to Joe.
Okay,
but then
okay,
the so, other side of the coin, man, I got to say, and then I'll let you talk. The other side of the coin, I'm like, it might be pretty interesting to see both sides, like both of them kind of piece things together and then kind of like reunite somehow and figure out how do we bridge this gap.
I'll sweeten the deal. If you bet that Paul is dead, you'll get two correct bets. If that actually comes true, that Bud shot and killed Paul, okay, that'll be two correct bets right on. It'll only count as one for me if I get it right.
You are sweetening the deal a bit there. can I give you till the end of this episode to give you my answer? Okay,
for sure, all right, so we do get the iconic funeral scene, which I gotta say was so well done.
Phenomenal.
Paul barely has the strength to go into this funeral, but he gets on pills, starts drinking, kind of has it out with his daughter, which the disconnect seems to be the fact that he kind of knows that this isn't the version of his daughter he knows. It's kind of unspoken, but you can kind of tell that's kind of how he feels about it, right?
Yeah.
Man, you see that in both worlds, right? Joe's having a tough time with her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And here, Paul is having a difficult time with his daughter here, although Wendy doesn't seem to know that it's not her father. But then again, we're not getting a very deep Wendy POV yet.
That's true. But don't forget that Magnus also didn't really quite realize that Joe wasn't Joe, right? Like, I think both Wendy and Magnus are just kind of sitting there thinking like, okay, look, shit went down. Like, both versions have a dead partner in one way or another there, like from outer space. Mm-hmm. So I guess they're just like, okay, maybe it's PTSD, maybe this is just trying to cope with things. Like, it makes sense that they're different. So I don't think Wendy and Magnus are really gonna wake up from that.
It does seem to me though that one of the reasons he's also feeling the way he feels is because he's technically going to his own funeral here. In a different timeline at the exact same time. Oh no, what I'm wrong.
No,
I'm
no, completely no, no, no. That My wasn't bad. That. It I'm was when confused. He visited that the was, grave.
That was Joe's. That was Joe's funeral at that one.
Yeah, he's yeah, going yeah, to yeah, Joe's yeah, funeral yeah, yeah, yeah. here.
See, I'm getting confused.
Well, look, I mean, like, there's a lot of back. Look, if you were walking around and you just saw like some dead version of me floating around, you'd be a little confused too.
Yeah,
especially since we're on Earth and there's gravity.
I still wonder, because it doesn't seem like Wendy's having these visions or these connections to what's going down, but Alice does. And I don't know why Alice does, other than potentially being on the iPad with her mother when everything went down. It's the only thing I can think of. She was somehow connected to her through the, you know, radio waves. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can think of as well. Did you also notice, digressing a bit here. No. Alice is not swapped. And that was another thing I was trying to say. The only people that were swapped were Joe and Paul. So they both got like body swapped somehow. Because the Joe we know does not know what the Cal is, and the Paul we know does, right? We know that that's the case. But Alice is seeing visions. I was just going to say, though I'm digressing a bit, we passed this a little while ago. Did you catch on you picked up on Alice speaking two different languages, throughout the story, which was done very well. Like, it was so fluid. I did not realize this stuff the first time I watched it. Yeah. But did you realize that even when like Joe's talking to Alice on the iPad, like what she's wearing changes at different points in different scenes. So there's one that I picked up on. At least one instance that I picked up on, and it's when Joe's has Alice facing her. She looks one way. And then do you remember when Joe goes over to the window, which I think is actually where she ended up having her eyeball sucked out. But she goes over to the window and then turns the iPad around to face Earth. And then we get this exterior shot looking at Joe and Alice looking at Earth. Do you remember that scene?
Yes, but I don't recall what they were wearing. So I did not pick up on that detail.
Alice was wearing something different when the iPad got flipped around.
Interesting.
So I don't know. Maybe it was the fact that there was, I don't know, some communication. Remember, she's not flipped, but she is having visions. Maybe she, I don't know, touched or had this experience with this middle ground area. I'm not quite sure what to call it yet.
Yeah, me neither. I do want to know why the hell everything's pretty much the same on these existences, except for Erica's name. I mean, Frida's name.
I don't know. I really don't get it.
Like, everything else is the same. Everybody else's name, house, everything's the same, and her name is different. I know the car colors
and,
are different.
And Bud, right? Like, Bud is different, too. And it's because she's different. That's why I'm thinking Bud and Henry's different.
I don't know if that's confirmed, if Bud and Henry's names are different. I just think that in one world, one goes by Henry, and in one world, the other one goes by Bud. You know? And so because the other one knows the existence of Henry, he's grown a disdain for the name.
Look, man, all I know is I'm looking up some nicknames for Henry, and I see Harry, Hank, dude, Hal, and Hanky.
If this guy doesn't play Muhammad Ali in a biopic,
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. He can even do the fact that Muhammad Ali kind of in his old age, I think he got Alzheimer's. I believe he had dementia, and
something.
And he plays he shows kind of somebody questioning their own mind in this episode too. Like, he goes to the full freaking psychological spectrum in this. In this episode, which is crazy, but okay. We do get another answer. I remember we were kind of going back and forth as to why they were at this cabin. We know Joe goes to that cabin to get away because she catches on to the cover-up going on, right? Because in one existence, the people know about this situation, and then in another existence, unfortunately, Paul's, nobody knows what the hell this is. So Joe takes Alice for that reason, because Magnus falls down. Or she pushes him down and he hits his head against the wall. And in this scenario, Magnus is just trying to take Alice to a place where they can disconnect and he can kind of try to break through to his daughter on the fact that her mother is dead.
Yeah.
Did you catch the Apple TV connection in the cabin with the painting on the wall?
The Apple TV connection with the painting on the wall?
The painting on the wall, she says, it's a changeling, which is
I heard that earlier in it was either earlier in the show or when I read something about the painting from an emailer. Yeah, it's talking about the changeling. It made me want to kind of go back and like, what was that show
we
all
got
about?
We got an email about the that painting.
I feel like it was just somebody that emailed us like an episode 2 or 3.
Okay.
Talking about one of the paintings. Like, they were telling us the names of the two paintings.
Okay. I gotta go back and look at that. Maybe we'll pull that up at the end of the episode when we do like the read throughs. All right. Paul tries to get answers from Michaela. He's unsuccessful in doing so, and so he's left with no choice but to go visit Bud in California. Now, Michaela does talk to Erica and tells her about high altitude psychosis and the fact that Paul's gonna have to go to a rehab clinic they have for astronauts who have a hard time adjusting to life back on Earth. So we don't know. Maybe Michaela's in on the cover-up somehow. Still, that's not 100% certain yet. I don't think she is, but
I think I kind of think she is. Well, they have the pills. Degree.
They have the pills in this reality.
Of course, they have the pills. She's obviously has some level of responsibility here, and if I recall correctly, and I'm pretty sure I am, when Bud was on that cruise ship,
it's hard. Take your pills, Bud.
He was talking to Michaela. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think whether it's a true cover up or what, I don't know. It kind of feels like a cover up. That's for sure. Just a dirty secret. Everybody wants to keep quiet.
Yeah. Bud and Paul get into a confrontation after Paul's going to him seeking answers. Seems like Bud is for some reason reluctant on giving Paul any answers, even though I guess we don't know at what point in the timeline this is for Bud. We don't know if he's back from the cruise yet or not. I would assume he is. At the time that this altercation occurs.
Well, I think it has to be. And I say that just because this altercation occurs after Paul collapses at Joe's memorial service thing. So
why on earth would Bud be so reluctant to give him any sort of information or confirmation as to what he's experiencing?
I don't know. I mean, why would Bud make his alternative self piss himself? I have no idea. Like, yeah. I mean, the guy just seems like a prick that is just so disappointed with himself and or just like how things are going out. Like he seems like he's in a foreign place. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'd have trust issues too.
Yeah, Bud pulls a gun, seems to shoot Paul, but we do cut away and we don't go back to that scene. So we'll catch up with them in episode 7. And then in the cabin, Magnus kind of hits his limit with Alice and reiterates to her that her mother's dead. But as Alice is sleeping, she sees car lights outside her window. And it's Joe from the other world looking at Alice through the window, pretty much. So There's that.
Yeah. I also feel like I should say, like, part of the reason why I feel like I'm leaning towards taking that bet that you're offering here is that we already know Bud's a killer.
Yeah, he is.
So maybe I don't know. I might take it.
All right, you got till the end of the episode to decide. So
all right,
you're good.
I feel like you've like watched a preview of something. And you know, something
I haven't watched a single preview. This is all staying in this episode.
All right.
Do you think Joe sees Alice here? What's going on? I did find it to be kind of anticlimactic, but maybe it was just to bring us up to date on the timeline.
At the cabin, you mean?
Does Alice switch over to the other Alice? Remember, at the end of the previous episode, Alice screams like, "You're not my mom," or something like that. Or, "I'm not your..." You know what I mean?
Well, it's... That's true. Like, that's been true for the Alice that we've seen with Joe this entire show, outside of like the snippets in episode 1 on the iPad. This version of Joe is not this version of Alice's mother. So that's true.
Yeah.
I don't know that they like, I don't think that Alice is flipping over or anything. I think Joe is just, something happened to her. And she is sitting in this in-between state where she's able to see, you know, at certain points in time, different things that are happening. Like, so she's seeing the two different versions of her daughter. But I don't think her daughters have swapped at all.
Yeah. All right. Well, that about wraps up everything that occurs in the episode. Do you have any final comments before we move on to categories and to... audience feedback?
I know this version of Magnus lost his wife, and I know the other version of Magnus cheated on his wife, granted after she cheated on him, but I kind of like this version of Magnus less,
huh?
I thought so. I mean,
this part, one's actually stronger. Me,
yes.
He's
stronger. Yeah, he is less of a wimp, but he's also more of like a dick to Alice. Like, he's insensitive. But I feel like that's just due to like him trying to process it, and that's kind of why I'm like, it's not like a super strong opinion that I have about him.
Well, in this reality, Joe didn't cheat on him and he didn't cheat on her. So they're in love with each other. He's coming to grips with the fact that his wife is dead and his daughter's acting super distant and just purposefully disagreeable with him. So,
yeah, she's pretty rude too.
Yeah, he's kind of just at his wits, and he's human too. You know, he reminds her, and she doesn't even care. I mean, she's 11 years old or 12 years old here, so she's a kid. But she says, "I lost my mom." And he says, "I lost my wife." You know, he's going through this as well. So,
yeah,
I like this version of Magnus actually better. So I kind of disagree with you. All right, but
like I said, it's not a very strong opinion. I don't like how short-tempered he seemed. I know it's a lot. I hope I never have to experience that, but
Paul was more short-tempered. Understandably so.
Paul, yeah, yeah.
But I don't like what. But Paul's I don't like when people chew with their mouths open, though.
No, I don't either. It's obnoxious. So obnoxious. If you chew with your mouth open, don't.
I think it's just always. I think it's just always ugly to see when you see a parent. Obviously, kids. They're kids and they need a parent to discipline them to keep them on the straight and narrow. But it is always ugly when it's out of character. When it's a moment at the funeral and he's telling his daughter, "Don't be an asshole." That's not the thing to do. And it's always kind of a jarring moment when you see that.
That's the other thing with Paul that I wasn't a big fan of. It's just dude, wrong place, wrong time. There's other things that you could do and other ways you could communicate that would be better than that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's get to categories.
Let's do it. Okay. Let's start with best character of the episode.
Paul, easy.
Agreed. Also easy. How about best scene of the episode?
Best scene has to be the funeral moment for me, personally.
That's funny, because that was the one I was going to pick. The other pieces were pretty interesting. Again, just to kind of see the alternate perspective, but the funeral was kind of what was really tying it together. That was one of the biggest standout moments, and it's really interesting to also see this version of Alice just standing there seeing herself. So, I liked it. I have one of the category. Before I get into that, did you have any lines that stood out to you?
Alice's, when she says, "When someone dies in space, do they die on Earth?" I thought that was good.
That's good. That's good. I liked it's less of a single line. It was more of just a little dialogue back and forth between Alice and Magnus, where she's like, "I lost my mom," and he's like, "I lost my wife." That one was good. Back. Yeah, it was. Who do you think has it worst?
Paul has it the worst of everybody here so far. He's in the world where nobody knows anything about what he's talking about. At least in Joe's reality, they're more familiar with what she's dealing with. There's even a marine observatory that reached out to her, to try to help her out. So I would say Paul has it the worst at this current moment.
If it's not Paul, I think it's Bud. Because I feel like Bud just got fucked.
Yeah,
big by time. The universe.
Big time. Big time.
So, yeah.
But Paul's not too far behind. He has the disgrace of leaving the body up in space. So, yeah. And Bud calls him out on that, with disdain. He's like,
"That's true.
You left a body up there. You did the unforgivable."
Yeah.
All right. Time to take the bet, Zachary. Do you take the bet that Paul is dead? Yes or no?
I think I'm going to take it.
All right, cool. Write it down, bud.
I'm writing it down. I have to give me a minute to get it written down.
All right. Cool. While you do that, I'm going to start reading some emails and some feedback.
Oh, snap.
From the episode and about whatever else. All right. From Maurice. Two worlds. In one world, Alice and Henry's, Joe is dead. When the accident happened, Joe returned back to that world. The world where Frederick and Joe had an affair. The other world is just upside down. Ilya lives in that world. I feel bad for Bud. Bud lives in a world where all the astronauts died. His experiment brought the two worlds together. Unfortunately, Henry lives in a world where he gets all the glory. Bud lives in the world where the astronauts die. Hard to explain. This is a stretch, I think. Just a theory. Ilya and Frederick are the same people. Who's Ilya? Ilya, the Russian astronaut?
There was a guy named Ilya earlier in the show.
Yeah, the Russian.
Yeah.
Ilya and Frederick are the same people, but dead Joe doesn't remember him or his name. I think Joe had and Ilya had an affair on the ship. Zach is 100% correct. Joe is dead on the other side. Paul lives. So does Bud. All right. Any comments on what's...
I mean, that sounds mostly correct. I don't know that Joe had an affair on the ship.
That's the only thing there that I'm like, I don't know about that one.
I think I agree with everything else. I mean, clearly, I just don't know that I agree with the affair on the ship. The affair on Earth, however, yes, I do agree with that.
Yes, for sure.
It happened.
Okay, another one, two more from Maurice. Wrap your head around this. Alice's friend. What if the second season showed the world from her eyes? In her world, maybe she thinks her dad should be dead too. We only really see her through Alice's POV, the POV where Alice's mom died and her dad lives, except for the funeral scene, but even that was through Alice's worldview. Yeah, I would hate season two to be that, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, same.
But yeah, I could see it. And then he says, Constellation, two worlds collide in episode one at 23:15 time mark. If you want to pull up episode one, 23rd minute, 15 second, we can do that real quick and see what he's talking about. And I think that would be pretty interesting to see if he's onto something there.
All right. So it's episode one.
Episode one, 23:15.
23:15. Let's look for this thing. It's 23:15.
What second is this?
Was
right there.
Yeah, that was 23:15. We're both...
Two worlds collided. He's absolutely right. The dead astronaut and Joe came into contact with each other.
Yeah.
And that kind of goes to Alice's line, if you die in space, do you die on Earth?
Mm.
I don't know. It's very complex, but you're right. Something does happen there. And maybe that was the moment that Joe switched over.
Yeah.
Because they even do a camera effect where she zooms out almost. Like they...
Yeah, like, it did look like there was like two different versions of Joe in that movie.
Maurice, do you work in the writer's room? Are you on to something?
Maybe he's an editor.
Huh. All right. Next email from Trey. Okay. He's talking about Man in High Castle. I think we talked about this on Masters of the Air.
Yeah.
That we got a recommendation for that show. He says, definitely recommend. We'll rewatch when you decide to start it. Been listening to you guys since Silo. Well done on the podcast. And I enjoy looking forward to it every week. Thanks for all you guys do. No problem, Trey. Appreciate
That's
it.
That's awesome.
Thank you for reaching out.
Can I say something?
Yeah, go.
I last night I watched the first episode of Man in High Castle.
Was it good?
I'm already hooked.
You're hooked already.
It's hooked. Episode one got me hooked. It was very, very interesting. I'm gonna watch episode two. Hopefully later this week we'll kind of see how things go with the move. But if episode two holds up, you're gonna have to watch it too.
Okay. All right, that's pretty serious. All right. I did start it. I have also been watching The Gentleman, Guy Ritchie's first TV show based on the movie The Gentleman, but loosely based. It's kind of just in that world. Hmm. Really good. Gang related. I love it. Theo James is the lead. He's a great actor. Great cast. Gustavo Fring. I always blank on his name in real life. Can you look up Gustavo Fring's actor's name? I know it. Giancarlo something. Esposito.
Gustavo Fring?
Yeah, yeah, but his name in real life is Giancarlo Esposito. What is it?
Gus, you mean?
Yeah, Gus. Look, what's his act? What's his name in real life?
I will tell you. Gus Fring, actor.
It's Giancarlo something.
His name is, Giancarlo. How do you pronounce that, Mario?
Giancarlo. What's his last name?
Really? It's Esposito.
Okay, I was right. Okay. Anyways, he's in it as well. Funny enough, he's a meth dealer in there, so that's kind of funny. they kind of leaned into that. Anyways, we got some Spotify Q&A activity. Epic as always, guys. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Thank you for all the IG messages as well. We're glad you guys are enjoying the show. That was from user 316N7NQTHLKDAUZYB. All right, you got to put a username so we can shout you out properly. From Smithers, good episode. Some pills 100% have a distinct taste. One of mine is super bitter. I don't take lithium though. Shrug emoji. I'm glad you guys watched because my wife isn't interested. Laugh out loud.
Yeah. Hold on, is this guy an astronaut?
No. Well, that I know of, maybe he is. I'm not
just
sure.
Maybe he's just taking vitamin pills.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
And then lastly, hold on, what do we got here? Did I miss another email? No.
I have no
idea. All right, I got one more from KKM Cat. This one has actually nothing to do with the show, but we did mention this in a rabbit hole that we did. And we're open to all opinions on the show. Nothing offends, really. Unless we do get some really douchey emails and like really bad reviews sometimes, like calling us all sorts of names and stuff like that. If you guys ever want to help us combat that, then just leave us a really good review. But we do get called all sorts of things and reviews. KKM Cat. I strongly but respectfully disagree with your Oscars diversity comment. I think it makes for more interesting choices beyond what I find overdone and boring, rich white boys club status quo. I get where he or she is coming from. KKM Cat sounds like a girl, but I could be wrong. But my point wasn't about not liking diversity in film. I'm Spanish. I mean, I would benefit from diversity quotas and stuff like that. I'm just speaking to the fact that I'm going to literally read for you the actual regulations that the Oscars set forth. And they actually posted this. They posted this in 2020. September 2020, and it was about their initiative to pretty much move the industry forward. I mean, I love foreign films. I love diverse films. You know, that is not a bother. I'm not defending myself. I could give a damn what people think of me out there, to be honest with you. But I'm just speaking from a perspective of, if you read these guidelines and you start to regulate what film is allowed to be in the Oscars, then you're no longer evaluating a film based on how good it is. You're evaluating it based on, does it have a Latin guy in there? Does it have a woman guy? Does it have a woman in there? Does it have a gay person in there? Does it have a black person in there or an Asian person? That's irrelevant to anybody who wants to watch a good movie. Now, if a movie happens to have those people because that's what the story is about and it's a great movie, fantastic, and it deserves it. But this is what it is to me is that now you have a board telling you what can happen. This Oscars this year, I believe, was the last Oscars that did not have these. I could be wrong. It might've been the first Oscars with it, but it says here we go. All right. I'm going to try to summarize it, but here we go. If you're interested in this sort of thing, if you're not, fast forward to the outro or we'll see you next week. Here's what it is.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Today, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences announced new representation and inclusion standards for Oscars eligibility in the Best Picture category as part of its Academy Aperture 2025 initiative. The standards are designed to encourage equitable representation on and off screen in order to better reflect the diversity of the movie-going audience. Blah, 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 blah. You can read the rest of that. It's just saying where they got it from. Okay. The aperture must widen to reflect our diverse global population in both the creation of motion pictures and in the audiences who connect with them. The Academy is committed to playing a vital role in helping make this a reality, says Academy President. Okay, we believe these inclusion standards will be a catalyst for a long-lasting, essential change in our industry. I think we're already seeing diverse films play out. I think we're already seeing the industry move in a positive direction where people in the past wouldn't watch foreign films, for example. But now I think you're seeing Netflix loaded with foreign films. You'll see a ton of Korean films on there, a ton of just films that you got to watch with subtitles. I don't like watching with dubs, but you got to watch it with subtitles. And I think more than ever, people are open to that. But here we go. For the 94th Oscars 2022 and 95th Oscars 2023, submitting a confidential Academy Inclusion Standards form will be required for Best Picture consideration. However, meeting inclusion thresholds will not be required for eligibility in the Best Picture category until the 96th Oscars 2024. Now, I don't know if this counts as the 2023 Oscars or the 2024 that just passed where Oppenheimer won, but I guess somebody can look that up because it's interesting. For the 96th Oscars 2024, a film must meet two out of the four of the following standards to be deemed eligible. So this is where, to me, you get into tricky water where you're regulating this stuff. Okay. To achieve standard A, the film must meet one of the following criteria. A1, lead or significant supporting actors. At least one of the lead actors or significant supporting actors is from an underrepresented racial or ethnic group. Asian, Hispanic, Latinx. I've never met a Hispanic person who identifies as Latinx. Black, African, Indigenous, Native American, Alaskan Native, Middle Eastern, North African, Native Hawaiian, or other Pacific Islander. Other underrepresented race or ethnicity. By the way, everybody has something that's underrepresented in their bloodline somewhere if you go far enough, okay? A2, general ensemble cast. At least 30% of all actors in secondary and more minor roles are from at least two of the following underrepresented groups. Women, racial or ethnic group, LGBTQ+, people with cognitive or physical disabilities, or who are deaf or hard of hearing. A3, main storyline / subject matter. The main storyline's theme or narrative of the film is centered on an underrepresented group. So now it's regulating based on if your storyline is based on a film centered around an underrepresented group, as they define. Women, racial or ethnic group, LGBTQ+, people with cognitive or physical disabilities, or who are deaf or hard of hearing. Okay, so now you're not only regulating who has to be in your film, who can be eligible to the most prestigious movie award in the world, you're also pretty much saying that if, because here's how I think about it as a filmmaker, as somebody who works in production. If I really want to game the system, let's make a storyline. Because I know I used to work at a film festival in charge of the submissions. Now I wasn't in charge of them, but I was part of like a coordinator in there. So I saw different film festivals have different niches for different people. So I know that certain film festivals really push horror films. Certain film festivals really push LGBTQ movies. So like they're really into like pushing movies that represent those stories. Others are into Hispanic. Others are into super indie lookings. Others are into just pushing the envelope. So, you know, as a filmmaker, if you want to get into X film festival, you have a much better chance of doing so if you make a good film about one of those stories. Okay. Okay. So that kind of now you're not just going based off of what's the best film. If that best film has none of these standards in it, I guess they're not eligible for the award, which is what my issue is. I'm not saying. Like for me, obviously you want the industry to move in a way that is not discriminating against people, right? But you don't want the opposite where now you have pretty much like, if you're not in these groups, now you're being discriminated against, right? And I know that the majority of, for the last 40, 50 years has been majority, I guess, white, Caucasian people who dominate the industry, right? But at the same time, you don't want discrimination going, you know, flying back the other way, you know? And I think the pendulum can swing too far back. We'll see. Time will tell. I'm not a, you know, I don't get offended if somebody disagrees with me. I'm just saying you're going to get into tricky waters now where you're going to start to regulate something when in reality, the best film should pretty much win no matter what the situation is. And you can based on whatever you want. For example, Parasite won Best Picture a few years back.
Phenomenal.
Okay. That film is a Korean film. Okay. If that film was released in Korea, nobody there would be a minority, right? Mm-hmm. Technically, because everybody in the film is pretty much Korean. So you get, I mean, it's an extreme example. It kind of doesn't make a total hell of a lot of sense with what I'm trying to say right now. But in America, that's a minority. So it counts for the Oscars. It's like, it's just kind of like you're jumping through hoops to qualify for something that is being regulated. And I get it. What they're trying to do is, you know, maybe with good intention, but I do think it has, it can have insidious results when you start to move away from merit. And I think we've already moved into a place where merit is what's doing it. I don't think, I think you're already seeing plenty of diversity there. And like I said, I'm saying this from the perspective of somebody who can go and check that box on Hispanic if he wants to and qualify as in the A1 category. You know, everybody I know for the most part is Hispanic. We're in South Florida. So Zach, as a white guy, is kind of the minority down here, to be honest.
Down
with you.
Here.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe we see the opposite side of things, but I don't know. You just don't want a good film to be left out for some BS board who's telling you, you got to check off these boxes. And I know, I just find the topic interesting because it's going to affect, I mean, we've always used the Oscars as the barometer for what films to watch. And by the way, these things go on. There's category B, where you have creative leadership and department heads. At least two of the following creative leadership positions and department heads have to be from underrepresented groups: casting director, cinematographer, composer, costume designer, director, editor, hairstylist, makeup artist, producer. It's literally going down the whole crew, okay? Then it says at least one of those positions must belong to the following, blah, 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 okay? Other key roles, at least six, now they're saying the specific number, at least six other crew team members, excluding PAs, are from an underrepresented racial or ethnic group. These positions include but are not limited to first assistant director, gaffer, script supervisor, etc. Overall crew composition: at least 30% of the film's crew is from the following underrepresented groups: women, racial or ethnic group, LGBTQ+. You can cheat this any which way you want, obviously. You know, anybody can claim on to just go and do an ancestry test and claim on to the one minority that's in your bloodline somewhere if you don't technically do it. But I'm just making an example. And then it goes on, standard C, you have to have paid apprenticeship and internship opportunities for underrepresented groups. So if you're white, you're shit out of luck unless you're a woman or you're gay. So it's pretty much like, you get what I'm saying? Like now it's your ticket boxes off, and somebody always gets left out in the dust when it comes to this. And it's nothing against trying to put forward having, you know, a diverse hiring force, but somebody's always going to get left in the dust. And now when you have an arbitrary board that's monitoring this to say whether your film qualifies or not, I don't know. That can get tricky. I mean, did Oppenheimer qualify under this? Maybe they did. Maybe they jumped through the hoops for it. But
I have no idea. I know the awards was the 96th Academy Awards, so I don't know where that falls in your order. And I hadn't heard of the whole list before. Like I knew that this was something that was
there's going more to be done. There's more, by the way.
I'm sure. Like
there's training opportunities, representation and marketing. The studio or film company has multiple in-house executives from or among the following underrepresented groups for on their marketing, publicity, and distribution teams. You know,
all I can say is like, I feel like that's the last thing that everybody wants to be kind of like, you know, trying to figure out. Like it should be worried more about doing a good job. But to your point, no, I mean, I agree with you, right? Like there's no issue with the diversity in the show or in the movie. It's the issue with the mandating it, right? Like my biggest concern with that is that, look, I think everybody maybe, you know, maybe that's a stretch, but I would imagine everybody, at least everybody I've ever spoken to, you included, you've seen a movie, you've seen a show where you notice like somebody's just kind of thrown in there just to throw them in there. Like they didn't play, you know, a big value, or they were not really integral to the story or something. And it felt forced. And my concern is that the quality of the storytelling and the, I guess, you know, maybe like depth and just realness of some of the storytelling might be sacrificed for some of this stuff.
I guess, look, time's gonna tell, right? You know, yeah. I think time will tell in terms of like what'll be obvious is if you have like a really big film and it gets snubbed and something that's much worse than it wins. But until that happens, we don't really know how much this will take it. I'm not like, you know, I just think it's a discussion point. And it's something that should be talked about because, you know, I just find that when you regulate something like this, now you're telling people the stories that they need to tell, or they're encouraging you to tell to fit their goals for what they want the industry to be, rather than you're a director and maybe you're passionate about a story that doesn't fall in line with this. But largely, it does seem to be, you know, it encourages diversity, but while also pretty much targeting anybody who's not a minority. So it pretty much, you know, says, hey, you had your run, and now we're going to legislate it this way. But hey, you know, if you can hit that 30% and you can hit, it seems like they've put plenty of loopholes in there to cheat it. Like I said, anybody can cheat this thing. I'm just saying it's arbitrary, and now you're opening it up to all sorts of politics and stuff like that doesn't need to be involved there. But look, everybody can try what they want to do. Just like I have my opinion, you have your opinion.
Yeah.
We can agree to disagree. I have a feeling the people who are cool with this don't care either way. If somebody gets snubbed that doesn't meet these regulations, because they would argue, you know, out with the white, rich, white status quo, as KKM Kat said in her thing. She said she's tired of the rich, white status quo. We were called out as white boys in an email several times. So, like I said, I could give a shit about the hate emailers. I don't. KKM is super, super kind and respectful in her response. Like, I love discussing things and having a conversation about it. And I know this is a rabbit hole we didn't intend to go down, but I thought it was an interesting comment. And I thought that because the Oscars just passed, that
it's a part of the time.
It makes sense. But, you know, some people get really infuriated if you disagree with them on something. And by the way, I'm telling you that I watch films. I love seeing diversity in films. I live in one of the most diverse places in the world. When I go to a place that's not diverse, I feel like it lacks flavor that I miss from home, you know? So, you know, that's one of the main reasons I love living in South Florida. But at a certain point, when you start to legislate that and you start to tell people the stories that they got to tell or that they should tell to get into the most prestigious thing, the award show that made one of the reasons that inspired me to want to go down in production, you know, it kind of sucks.
I feel like it just stifles creativity, right? Like, I think I get like constraints and things like that, but
Zach, I don't think it will. I don't think it will stifle creativity. What I think it'll do is I think people will game the system and they'll cheat these regulations and still get nominated for it. And then people will call them out on social media for whatever. What'll truly be the test is if they get snubbed for awards for something or other, you know?
Yeah.
If it doesn't go far enough into the regulations. But hey, is what it is. Hey, y'all. Thanks for listening. If you made it this far, you're some of the best audience members that we have. We're welcome to, you know, all topics on here on the Story Archives podcast. So if you want to get in touch with us, it's contact@soapbox.house. We thank you for tuning in each and every week. We can't wait to continue the Constellation journey. We're only going to be doing one show unless I hit you with some nice bonus episodes. I'm watching The Gentlemen. I'm watching Tokyo Vice. Apple has a bunch of shows coming out like The Hunt. They already released episode 1 and 2, I think. And you got Franklin around the corner. There's quite frankly too many shows for me to keep up with at the moment, but I do want to hit you guys with some bonus episodes. Zach is continuing to post Peaky Blinders on our YouTube channel.
Slowly, and, I'm moving.
albeit quite slowly because he's in the middle of a move. But once he's situated and all settled in again, we can probably get back to a 2-show cadence as we planned. There's lots of good shows around the corner. The Bear season 3 is around the corner. We have House of the Dragon coming out in the summer. We have Silo season 2. We got Severance season 2. We have all sorts of season 2s coming soon. And Zach, to your outro.
Awesome. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of Constellation by Story Archives. You can find this podcast anywhere you find podcasts, Apple and Spotify podcasts primarily. You can visit us on YouTube at Soapbox Podcast Network. Email us at contact@soapbox.house. And there's a link in the description below to sign up for a quarterly newsletter. I think that's I feel like I missed something there, but I think that's enough.
If you'd like to support the show, we have a Patreon link or whatever you want to do if you feel so inclined to do so. And make sure to like the show, review it, rate 5 stars, help us combat the opinionated bigots out there. So, all right, until next time, y'all, we'll see you on Constellation. Well, soon, actually. It released already today, so we'll see you on the next
one. We gotta watch that. All right. Peace.
Peace.